there's just so many options, and it's getting easier to find material and work, but you have to like also put in the effort and the energy. But if you don't feel like it at the time, don't push yourself, okay? Also remember, self-care.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is production coordinator and storyboard artist, KB Woods. Well, she does quite a bit more than that too, actually. She's also an illustrator with an Etsy shop called Star Rain Studio. Catch her on Twitch as Maybe It's KB, and a podcaster, the host of the Creating in Color podcast, where she interviews creative BIPOC professionals to inspire and give guidance to students, kids, and people looking for a career shift. She believes that animation is a powerful storytelling medium and that it's never too late to do what you're passionate about. Since breaking into the industry, she's worked on productions at DreamWorks TV and Netflix Animation. While she's a coordinator at the moment, she's working hard on her portfolio and skills to make the transition to storyboarding. Hear all about it and how she hopes to make her dreams a reality. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, everybody. My name is KB, she, her, and I am a production coordinator working her way into becoming a storyboard artist as a revisionist first. I am also an illustrator, streamer, voiceover artist, podcaster, and a Taurus, I guess. What I love about animation is the storytelling aspect and just how you can get such beautiful storytelling that you cannot get in other forms of media. Animation, I feel like, really opens up the door to so many possibilities that we just can't even fathom with like live action. No diss to live action, of course. But yeah.
Origin story. Like, what made you want to pursue animation and art to begin with?
Okay. So this is kind of a long-ish story. So growing up, I always wanted to be a veterinarian. I wanted to be a vegetarian veterinarian. And, you know, that was the title. That was a dream. And when I was in high school, it was career day or whatever. And a vet's like, oh, yeah, if you're like getting this GPA, you know, you ain't going to be this. And I was over there like rocking not that GPA. So I was just like, oh, dang, I guess that's not going to work out for me anymore. So I was trying to think of, oh, what other options would I even be interested in? And my first thought was actually going into game design. But then I was told that was a lot of math. And me and math, we do not mix. We are oil and water. So instead, I was like, oh, maybe like comics. I kind of like doing comics or books. But then like the obvious answer was right there in front of me. Animation. And I went to school, started taking art classes like in college, started studying animation, and I absolutely adored it. So I knew I did the right thing by going with animation. I mostly focused in design and 2D, 3D animation with a little bit of 3D modeling. And now I have zero interest in really doing any of those.
It's I good like foundation, though, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's what college is for.
As, you know, you get your feet wet in all different types of things. And what's interesting was the college I went to actually didn't teach storyboarding. Like, we had like one day where the professor was like, "Okay, we're gonna like quickly run down what the gist of storyboarding is."
Oh my gosh.
And you know, you can't really get storyboarding in one day.
No.
But that's how that worked out. So obviously it's kind of weird that I wanted to go in. Well, it's not weird, but it's different that I wanted to go into storyboarding since I don't really have that much of a foundation. But it's just because I love comic making, because I used to make a bunch of web comics, and I'm like trying to even get back into making comics. And I really liked animating, and it felt like storyboarding was like the perfect in between, like mix of the two, you know, mm-hmm. if you don't think about how clean those other things have to be and how just like storyboards just have to be clear. Right.
Yeah, it makes sense why like a lot of the 2D animators, when like 2D movies weren't being made as often, went into mm-hmm. storyboarding and like other things in TV where you actually still got to draw.
Yeah, exactly.
So that makes perfect sense.
Oh, thank you. I know a director I talked to on a project I was on, like he kind of told me about his storyboarding experience and how basically storyboarding wasn't even a career. Like, obviously it was a career when I was in college. Your girl ain't that old. he was telling me how storyboarding really wasn't a thing until like late 90s as like a, like its own title of a job. And he kind of just like got thrown into it and had to kind of figure it out. And it was kind of like sink or swim. And he was able to swim just fine. So it's just kind of interesting seeing how like storyboard, I know this is supposed to be about my origin story. I'm sorry. Now I'm just talking about the origin of storyboarding.
I love it. Let's do it.
But it's just interesting seeing how storyboarding has evolved from like, oh, just maybe do some beat boards to like, oh, I need you to like kind of figure out this shot and all these shots and now kind of animate it. And also, can you do some editing? And like, it's changing consistently, which is very fascinating. So it's a fun career to be a part of where you're consistently learning, which is something I like.
Totally. And that is such an interesting point that you bring up too, is that, you know, it used to be more like beat boards where the information was there for where the animation should go and the mm-hmm. storytelling beats. But now productions are asking their board artists to be much more than that, like an editor and an animator. Like a lot of these boards are getting so clean and so detailed. It's like shocking. That's really why we have like New Deal for Animation going on right now at the time of this recording anyways. So
yeah, I mean, for sure the role needs to be revisited because it's a lot. And I get it. Well, I don't know if I get it, but I get it for like smaller studios that don't have the budget for an editor to like start from scratch with just panels or what have you. But, you know, some of these bigger studios, like they definitely should just rely a little bit more on their animatic editor. Like, come on, let them have some fun too.
Yeah. I mean, even when you have an animatic editor and the board artists and directors are editing in the software, it's like, why? But their decision, I guess. Hopefully they're not being pressured, but also the editors really want to edit too, so it gets like really hairy when you get into like these subjects.
It really does. Like, actually, never mind, I'm not gonna say it because I ain't trying to start drama on your podcast, but I'm just
gosh. I've tried for years to stay out of it, but you know what, I'm done. We are a gossip cast now.
On this one project that I was on, there was like some drama happening with edit. Well, actually, it wasn't a project I was on. It was a project my friend was on. But there was some drama where like editors are like, hey, can you board artists like not try to edit because you don't know how and this is my thing? It's just like, ooh. Spicy. Yeah.
And then on the flip side, board artists are like, well, can you edit the way I envision it?
Exactly.
Like, oh my gosh.
And then like, you know, production's just over here, like eating popcorn, watching it on like fold before their eyes and just like, okay, I'll pick up the pieces when this is done.
Yeah. Let them get it out. Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out afterwards. And I think in production, it's such an interesting place to be because you see both sides of it. And especially as a production person who is also an artist, like you empathize with everyone you have to deal with at the same time too.
I do. It's kind of a weird spot to be in because And like, you know, there's a lot of people in production who want to move into art roles or writing roles or, you know, something a little more creative. And it's a weird place to be in because you obviously know where like every artist is coming from and like you understand the schedule and you see them like trying to hit their deadlines and what have you. And you also learn how to deal with a bunch of different personalities. Like, woo, customer service experience is great for production, let me tell you. Which, you know, I had to do that for a few years before I got my job.
Me too.
So I always try to be understanding with the artists that I manage, but at the same time, like, it's not about me as a production person. And I feel like a lot of people kind of blame you as production that like, oh, why is my deadline today? Ooh, but I told you like 2 weeks ago was today. Oh, blah, 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 or whatever. And it's just a frustration that you have to deal with. But being in production at the same time, you get to speak to like all kind of departments that you normally wouldn't in other roles, you know? So like, from what I hear from like a coordinator that was my coordinator when I was a PA, he is now a revisionist and he's like, I haven't even met the rest of the crew. And it's so weird. If you don't even know what you want to do in animation and you go into production, I actually feel like that's a great way to just kind of expose yourself to different things. Because when I initially went into animation industry as a PA, I wanted to do design. And it wasn't until I talked to a different director that I'm like, oh, I want to do storyboarding. And I was just so thankful that she taught me the basics of storyboarding, not just in a day in like a 2 hour class, mind you, but she took the time to like help me understand that. And I also got to learn animatic editing from the editor. And I got to learn a little bit of writing from the writers and some like color theory and designs from the design team and the art director. And production, I feel like, also makes you just a better artist in general because you get to see those deadlines and understand that schedule and see how everything waterfalls into each other, that you're like, okay, if I'm late on this thing, then this is going to affect this department and this department and this department. So I'm going to make sure I pace myself properly so I can hit all my deadlines. If that makes any kind of sense. I don't know, I feel like I was rambling.
No, it's not a ramble because it's all like truth. Because I feel the same way also because, you know, I feel like if I hadn't been in production before being a writer, I would have a harder time meeting all those, you know, deadlines we have. Like, I think that's 100% true, especially when you realize that, like, oh, if I ask for like two more days or whatever, that bumps like my story editor into two less days to revise it or give me notes to revise it myself. Right. You know, like if writing is late, then storyboards can't launch on time, design can't launch on time. And it just kind of like keeps stealing time away from the next steps. You know, somewhere down the line, someone's going to have what used to be a week to do something and only have 2 days to do it, you know, because there are some deadlines that are just not movable. There's some flexibility in some areas, but you don't want to be the person to rob another person of their time.
Yeah. So
I try to be very empathetic about that. And I think being in production and seeing how everything moves through the pipeline is very helpful.
Yeah, exactly. And also, just full disclosure, my experience is mostly in series. I don't really know that like feature life that well. I was like on a feature project for like 3 weeks to just help them like push it to the end and that's it.
Yeah, same here. I'd love to work in feature someday. What I kind of like I've asked some people who've worked in feature like what their schedule is like because it seems like they have things in different pieces of production, like something might be an animation or layout already, even those storyboards are still happening. So what I kind of assume is that maybe like every sequence is like an episode, you know, but like they won't be like our rainbow schedules where it just kind of waterfalls down like you were saying.
Right. But
again, I've only asked questions, so it's like abstract and not experience wise. So if any feature artist wants to come on and explain it, please do.
Please do. Help us.
We want to learn.
We want to learn.
So You had mentioned your first gig was a PA. How long after you graduated college, how long did it take to break in?
A while.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just before I graduated, I was an intern. And thankfully, I was still on speaking terms with my supervisor. So I was in connections with him. But I ended up selling books for a little bit and making coffee for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Haha, man, that was a time. don't order frappuccinos in large bulks, please. Just help them out. Eventually I got a PA job from randomly. I think I was on Indeed and I was just oh no, I remember. Okay. I had to quit my coffee job because I was done. I quit just before the holidays. It was a very rude move, but
it's a good time to quit though.
Yeah, it's a really good time. That's when that eggnog business comes in and it's just and everyone's obsessed with those pumpkin spice lattes. I ain't gonna judge your lattes, just I don't wanna make them. So what was I saying? So I quit and I was unemployed for a couple of months and just kind of applying crazy to any kind of production assistant job I could find. And I reached out again to my supervisor and I'm like, please give me notes on my resume, please. And I ended up getting a job at a greeting card company as a PA. Fun. Yeah, in many ways it was. I did production work and administrative work. So it was a lot of just data entry and management and just it was a lot. It was the people were cool and it was real fun. But then a month into it, I ended up getting hired by my former supervisor. So I got to be a PA on his show and eventually, I was able to get promoted within the show to a coordinator. And yeah, I've just been hanging as a coordinator, working on my portfolio and getting ready to play that game again where I just apply crazy and just someone look at my resume and portfolio, please.
So what I love about you applying just to production assistant roles, just wherever they will take you. Even though it was an animation, the greeting card company, you still had a production support staff role. And those skills are totally translatable to animation because while there may not be as much data entry sometimes, and it's helpful to know the lingo and the vocabulary and something about the pipeline, all those things are learnable. So just having been in the support staff, moving things forward, it's helpful experience because I feel when I was looking for PA roles originally, it was hard because everyone's but you have no PA experience, but it's the entry level mm-hmm. job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I get a lot of questions where it's how do you get that job with no experience? And it's well, you can have it with no experience. It just depends on who you're talking to, interviewing you or looking at resumes, et cetera. Yeah. So if you cannot get that PA job in an animation studio you really desperately want, go get a PA job somewhere else or just any kind of office administrative job because some people see the translation there. So,
Honestly, I talked to my supervisor at the greeting card company and he told me the reason why he was interested in me was because of my resume having customer service experience and a little bit of administrative office work that I've done at one of my other retail jobs. So it's really random how your experience can affect someone's I think this person can do it. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. The best thing to always do is to fully read the board posting for the job and try to cater your resume to best fit what you think they're looking for. Because at the end of the day, you really don't know what they're looking for. And I also don't think they really know what they're looking for. So just like try to make it as easy as possible for them and just use their language right back at them. And it also shows that like you know how to read things like completely thoroughly too, which is like just a big part in, I would say, any job. I guess. I don't know. I'm not an expert.
100%. Yeah, I love that. I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but like when I was applying for internships right after I got out of college, it was like in college and after college, like I applied twice, didn't get any calls or anything, or I interviewed or something. No, I think I interviewed, but I didn't get beyond the first interview. And then the third time I used more active language, mm-hmm. like that matched exactly what they were looking for in the job posting. And I finally got to like the second interview. So you it does see? Matter.
It matters. Yeah.
And I used that language in the interview too, the third time. So it matters so much.
It really does. Oh, also good job.
Thanks. Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about it, because I was like, but why did I get the first two interviews? And it was because I knew someone at the studio who recommended me internally. So that also helps, but it doesn't get you the job.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I would say in a really weird way too, that for me, I can't really speak for other people. When I'm like recommended internally by someone at the studio, I'm like, okay, I have to make sure that I'm like 110%. I don't want them to look bad if like they don't, if they think there's something strange about me. So I got to like really up my game. Like I just, I feel a little bit more pressure because I'm trying to not only look good for myself, but also for my friend. Mm-hmm. Not saying like, not saying please don't like stop, like don't come on, keep helping me out. It's just like another little thing that like pops in my head. I don't know.
Oh, definitely. I always get worried that like one day I'm going to, because like I'm really big on recommending people when I feel like they're a good fit. Mm-hmm. But I always worry that like, yeah, I'm going to do something bad and then all my recommendations are just going to be shit.
Yeah, be like, yeah.
If I recommend you, you won't get the job because everyone hates me. But that's also my anxiety talking. But it is
hey, a fear. Yeah, same.
In that in between where you weren't getting hired in animation, like how did you keep your like enthusiasm up or your motivation going? Because that's mm-hmm. a hard time, you know, like I remember that. And yeah. I remember being very depressed in that quite like a few year period for myself.
I was really depressed too, actually. This is a really good question. I guess I kind of started picking up different hobbies and I got really big into like cosplaying and makeup. I started sculpting a lot. Like I did a lot of traditional physical art, which now is kind of like my go-to whenever I start feeling like really stressed or sad or have a really bad artist block. I'll just like go back to that for whatever reason. But in addition to sculpting and physical art, I also got really into voiceovers. Like I did a lot of voiceover for like projects that my friends would do in school. And I started doing like voiceovers for just like random like video game projects, like mm-hmm. people making movies from video games. I did a lot of voiceover for that. And I was like, I think it's time for me to go professional. That didn't happen. Spoiler alert. But I took a lot of voiceover classes and it helped me understand like the mindset of acting, because at first I just thought it was about the voice. But it's not, the voice is second. The acting comes first. So I've learned a lot about just acting, improv, and I feel like just that knowledge of how you're supposed to move your body, how you feel about this, how your head's supposed to move or whatever, I now implement that into my art. And I, at the time, like I said earlier, I was trying to get into design. So I was also taking some art classes because I realized that my art fresh out of college was not very good. So I had to continue my education once I was done with college. And I took some art classes and I kept working my portfolio. And I knew I wanted, because at first I wasn't interested in being a production assistant. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like I want to be an artist. I don't want to do production. And I talked to my friend who was a production artist or a production artist who was a production assistant. And she was telling me her experience and all this other stuff. And I was like, I think I should try to become a production assistant because right now I'm just making work for my portfolio and I don't know if this is any good. So that was part of my motivation to switch my focus to becoming a production person because I was throwing art into the wind. It was like, go do something. And then it just like fell behind like a tree that I couldn't see, you know? Mm-hmm. So as far as like just staying motivated, basically that was, I just kind of focused on other things while also keeping in mind that I need to work on my portfolio and I needed to get out of that coffee job. That was a big motivator. And just talking about it over with my friends, because it got to a point where I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to get into the industry. I'm giving up. And then like, as soon as I made the announcement that I was giving up, because you know, you always have to be like, attention, I have an announcement. I was just about to give up. And then I got the greeting card PA job and I was like, okay, never mind. I take it all back.
Yeah, I feel that's so true. Like, I do feel like, you know, that's triggered memories for me where, like, right at the end of my rope where I was like, okay, I think I'm done. Like, something good happens, like, either right before I make that declaration or, like, right after it, that thought comes into my head. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you make day trip plans or a week, try to go home for a week, you get a sometimes a job opportunity, you're like, oh, well, I was going to go home that week, but maybe I won't now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I think that's so brilliant that, like, you know, we make art in a vacuum sometimes, you know, and you don't really know if it's good or if it's the type of art that could go forward in an animation production. Cause like, you know, all art has value, you know, cause it's mm-hmm. expression, right? But when you're trying to get a job like in animation, there are a lot of specifics that are necessary to be useful in like storyboarding and animation and rigging and modeling, et cetera, moving forward. So in being in production, and I think you touched on this earlier, that you get to see the art that gets approved by the art director. You get to hear the questions that they're asking and, like, you know, see the problems that they're problem solving with design and boarding and composition. So mm-hmm. that must have been really cool when you finally got there.
Yeah, it was so cool. Okay, so because you never really get to be behind the scenes. It's like getting to sneak, like, getting to see backstage at Disneyland, like you get a sneak peek, you're just like, oh, but where are the tunnels? I was in the tunnels, you know? Mm-hmm. So I got to see like the rough sketches, the cleans, the colors. And as you said, like I always got to hear their notes and I got to like hear their thought process behind things. And it was amazing. And as I said, I realized I didn't want to do design anymore because of this. And I just loved the way story would go from words on a piece of paper to characters running around, having adventures and doing all kinds of crazy things that you wouldn't think would be possible, basically. And it was just amazing. It was amazing. And being in production gave me the opportunity to get a taste of everything. And because of my voice acting background, I would also do a lot of scratch work for nice. Boards. Uh-huh. And I'm like, ooh, 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 let me do some scratch for you. And I would like sometimes do entire episodes and it'd just be me talking to myself. But it was really fun. And just also the the crew was amazing for at least this one show I'm thinking of in particular. The crew was amazing, and everybody really, like, as a whole, typically cares about each other. And especially if they know you're a production person who wants to move into a creative role, you're nurtured. Like, no one's ever like, oh, no, you can't do that. You're in production forever. And if, like, they are that, don't listen to them, because you are who you want to be. So live your life and, like, let people know what you're interested in, because I had a habit for the longest time of just not telling anybody that I did art. I would just keep it quiet, and then they would see, like, a doodle I did, and they're like, oh, who'd you do this? I'd be like, I did. And they're like, oh, my God. So don't keep it a secret. Don't keep it a secret. And it doesn't necessarily mean, like, post a bunch on social media, but just, like, tell – if you're, like, an intern, tell your, like, crew that you're working with, like, oh, yeah, I'm interested in doing this. Try to find someone who's in a role that you're interested in, and, like, just pick their brain a little bit and be like, how did you get started? What are you into? Blah, blah, you know? And that's how I got the most information out of people, is always be like, tell me your love story. And – instead of, like, asking, do you have any tips? Because I met, oh, my God, what's his name? Jim Cummings, I think? He voiced Ray in Princess and the Frog. Mm-hmm. I randomly met him at my aunt's house. I don't know why he was there, but he was. And I was like, do you have any tips to get into voice acting? He's like, always believe in yourself. I'm like, oh, okay. I was hoping for a little more detail.
Yeah.
So, like, ask people how they get started, because – you know, they'll spill the tea that way. And also, people like talking about themselves.
Oh, that's so cool. And it is so true that, like, you've had mentors along the way, obviously, by, you know,
yeah,
you know, talking to your coworkers and stuff. I know when I first, you know, got my internship, I was, like, trying to find a mentor, and I was, like, literally just like, will you be my mentor? Or, like, do you have, like, a personal, like, artistic development plan that you could, like, put me on? Like, it's so,
right,
like,
yeah.
I cringe remembering how enthusiastic I was when I first got out here. And people don't have time for that, you know. And some people make time for that, of course, like, you know, people who mentor with, like, women in animation, mm-hmm. or, you know, do their own personal things where they take on, like, a couple people and just kind of give them as much training as they can. Because I think that's the only way to get more diversity into the industry as well. So it's so great when people can do that. But, you know, these jobs are hard and time consuming. And just to try to stay on top of your own skills, it's very exhausting. And you, especially in the early years, you definitely put more time in than just your work hours in terms of, you know, continuing to improve and be as fast as you need to be to stay on schedule.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I love the idea of asking people when you can questions and getting advice, because then everyone's kind of your mentor and you're piecing it all together to become, like, you know, like a patchwork quilt of what your skills and knowledge will be, right?
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, like you said, people have their own schedules and lives and work. So not everyone's going to be able to give you such detailed information about your work. But people basically just want to see others succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I had two directors on two different projects, both I mentioned already because I just adore them so much, who took me on and taught me so much more than I was ever able to learn. Because, hey, I'm not able to afford a lot of additional classes. Art classes are very expensive, and there are, like, affordable options. And I'm just very lucky to have found people who were interested and able to help me grow and develop as an artist. And I've managed to also get into a mentorship program called Story for All. They're trying to help BIPOC artists break into storyboarding by helping them improve their craft. And basically, they just, like, want to look at your portfolio and see that you're, like, oh, you're almost there, you're getting there, and, like, help you get that oomph. So I've been very fortunate to be a part of that program, and I love my mentor. She's great. But yeah, just finding these opportunities where you can learn on a budget, I guess. Like also get lots of books. I have so many art books. It's ridiculous. Like I had to move earlier. This like a few months ago, and I'm just like, I have too many books. This is ridiculous. This is so heavy. But getting books like inked every frame or framed every ink. It's a comic book. It's a book about making comics, but it's like a great like book about composition.
Nice.
Or like there's a lot of free sources on YouTube, and there's also like a lot of like storyboard artists who make classes now online for either free or for very low prices. But there's just so many options, and it's getting easier to find material and work. But you have to like also put in the effort and the energy. But if you don't feel like it at the time, don't push yourself, okay? Also remember, self-care.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. I feel like it's so easy to like drive yourself like, you know, pretty nuts trying to be everything you feel like you need to be to get, you know, your first gig or just to get work in general.
Yeah. But
I love the, you know, for those who can't afford art classes and, you know, yeah, a lot of them are so expensive. I was looking for the cheapest things I could frickin' find here in Southern California when I was like trying to break in, and I was working at the theme park in Disneyland. So I love your metaphor of the the tunnels. I'm like, oh, yeah, been there. So yeah, I found Skillshare to be, you know, pretty affordable, as well as schoolism.com.
Oh, yes.
I love their classes. I think they're really good. And they have a lot of pros teaching, which is really great, too. Because that's the one thing Skillshare doesn't quite have. It's like they have a bunch of artists, and so you can get like all these cool tidbits from all of them that can become your own style, which is great, I think, to do. But if you're looking for a specific like how to draw for animation or how to paint the backgrounds or visual development, I feel like Skoolism is a good way to go. But they're still kind of pricey, you know what I mean? It really depends on what you're able to do. But also the Animation Guild has classes.
They do, yeah.
And those are pretty affordable as well. And you get a community. Because I think that's the biggest reason to go to college is for the community, right? Like, you're going to get the foundations. Like, you're going to get the network. And there's other reasons, obviously.
Yeah. It's nice because those that you graduate with become, like, your first real network. And you will run into each other again.
Yeah.
Because the industry is just that small. So you'd be like, oh, hey, I remember you from that that Rickon class. How you doing? So, it's college is nice for, I would say, mostly the community, at least for my experience. And, you know, obviously the foundation. But just getting to, like, meet other animation people and, like, talk shop a little bit, like, you know, as best as you can while you're in school. It's really nice.
Yeah, it was definitely my first community, and having to be around like-minded people who are obsessed with animation, because like no one really understood me before then. They're like, those TV shows for kids, like, or those musical movies that are like drawn. But like, yeah, I'm obsessed. No one would understand why I kept pausing every frame. So you know what I mean. It's your first like, oh, I'm not insane.
Exactly.
So it makes perfect sense to me, like hearing about like your journey so far and how like you love to talk to everyone you work with, being in those production roles. And it makes sense to me that you'd create a podcast, you know, creating in color, which is fantastic.
Oh,
and I'd love to hear more about it. Pitch it to the audience.
Oh my God. Okay, hold on. So, Creating in Color is a podcast where I feature creative BIPOC individuals talk about what they're doing, where they're going, and how they got there. I was inspired to create this podcast for one. I like to do a lot of different types of art stuff, and I wanted a central place to like be able to hear people's experience about different things. Like on top of like animation, I also really love illustration and in both like sticker design and books and stuff like that, and video games and just all kinds of different creative things. And also I was watching a Vice interview, and one of the women said that in her community, her cousins really only knew two ways to make money, to steal or play ball. And I was just like, well, that doesn't sound right. So I wanted a place that also someone who is BIPOC would be able to be like, oh, hey, this person's Black and they're a supervising director. I would love to hear how they got started, because like I don't even know what that is. And I would love to learn more. And on top of learning more, I also try to feature not just like buzzword titles, I guess, of jobs. So I have a production coordinator. I have animatic editors. I have a storyboard revisionist, and I plan on actually having a PA in my upcoming season, and also a stop motion person. But like, you know, I just really love stop motion. Ha ha. So yeah, I'm very excited about my new season, and I really do love creating in color. It's my first podcast I ever made, and I don't know. I would love to like help it expand to mentorship programs and classes and stuff. Just not yet, because it's already a lot of work.
Yes, but podcasting is.
Yeah. I know, you know.
I know. I'm tired. And I can imagine you are too. Especially in those years where you're trying to get to the role that you want, you know? Mm-hmm, it's really a lot of work to do something like a podcast and keep it at least fairly regular. I know I've been super inconsistent with this one. But it's also such – it feels like important work too, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like – people of color and, you know, women and, you know, the queer community, like it takes more effort to get these jobs and to continue getting work. You put your nose to the grindstone and you're just working super hard. So like, and maybe you felt this too, listening to other creative podcasts, it's like you mostly hear from one section of humanity, you know. Mm-hmm. So you like, you want to hear more representation and more perspectives, right? So
yeah,
that keeps me going. And I'm glad that, you know, it sparked making the show for you too.
Thank you. I want to make more podcasts. I just don't know how I will do that time-wise. But like, I want to hear more podcasts from Black, Brown, women, queer communities. Just because I'm always like, I want to support on Twitch. I'm always like, I want to support all the Black women gamers. Like, where are they all? So I just want to see us like dominate these different spaces and be able to support one another.
Yeah. I feel like if there's anyone out there who is interested, I'm kind of speaking for you, KB, so please interject if I overstep my boundary here. But I feel like if anyone is out there who wants to get into these spaces, like, you know, you do Twitch and you do podcasts, like storyboarding, like if anyone wants information, reach out to you. And writing, reach out to me. Like, I feel like we're pretty open people. You know?
Yeah. Reach out to me. I don't mind. I have some people who listen to my podcast, like message me on my art Instagram, just like, oh, I really like your podcast. I'd love to learn more. And like, can you give me some learning resources? And like, I go out of my way to help those people because, you know, for one, I feel so flattered. Mm-hmm. But for two, like, I don't believe knowledge should be behind like a paywall or like kept secret or whatever. Like when I first got into cosplaying, nobody was sharing how to make armor at all. So I couldn't make my Samus suit, sad face. But I feel like, you know, just reach out to folks. And not everyone's gonna respond to you, obviously, but I will respond.
Yeah.
I will do my best, honestly. Yes. I get scared sometimes.
Same. Usually if I don't respond, it's because like I missed the email, so follow up in a couple weeks, or I'm overwhelmed and anxious, and I'm crying in a corner. So again, follow up in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
That's same, usually same. Always my reasoning. Like, it's a lot of work to, you know, have a full-time job, make a mm-hmm. podcast, and then be mm-hmm. unbelievably tough to manage. So.
It's like you're, are you talking for me also?
Just no,
like,
I'm talking for myself.
Because, like, you're like, speaking for me too.
This is why we get along. This it's is also why. Clear. But even like, so knowing that about you, it's also like so impressive to me that you push through, make the podcast and still, you know, stream and, you know, you stay fairly active on social media. We've had this talk before and it's just really impressive to me.
I also have an Etsy shop and I'm working on a children's book right now.
Nice. Yeah. If you want to do something, just go out and do it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Don't let anything stop you, especially yourself.
Especially yourself. 100% agree. Can I just like plug something real quick?
Oh, please. That's plug basically everything.
I guess like my motivation as to why I'm doing so many things. Yes. But I basically, 2 years ago, I think when I first started creating color or was about to start creating color, the only reason why I followed through with it was because I told people about it. And people are so excited. And because I get really nervous. I come up with story ideas all the time. I might design a couple of characters, maybe even a background or two. But then I say, I'm not ready yet. Or my skills aren't good enough yet. Or what have you. Like, I had a story idea I've been sitting on for like, I don't know, 15 years. And I think talking to people about your ideas and just having this hub of support, because like hopefully they also talk to you about their ideas. In theory, that's how it would work. And having them like check up on you and you check up on them, it also like helps you like feel accountable in a weird way. And it also helped that I like my podcast involved other people. So I had to like start scheduling dates. And when you have other people involved, you even feel more obligated to finish your project.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So yeah. 100%. And I recorded my first episode with my friend Sam. And it was actually the only episode I ever did in person because the pandemic happened like a month later. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice having that support system. So if you're able to find a community that you feel comfortable and safe in to share your projects with, like don't just be sharing your projects with anybody. But if you feel safe and comfortable with a community doing that, share it and maybe even bounce ideas off. And hey, maybe all of you just work on one project together. Who knows what will happen? It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Power together.
Power together.
Yeah.
And this is coming from an introvert, so.
I know. I feel like I'm more of an ambivert because I can be extroverted sometimes, but I think my core is introvert, so totally relate.
I feel that. I feel like I have to flip a switch, especially when I, like, go to streaming because it takes a part of you, so.
Well, it's kind of like a persona you put on, right? Like, it's like you're turning up who you are to be a little bit more entertaining. Is that kind of what it is?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, when I first started streaming, not to like now talk about my streams, but when I first started streaming, I was a little bit more like high energy, and that's just not really who I am anymore. I used to be like a very hyper kid, like, oh my God, stop giving this child sugar kind of hyper kid. And, you know, I'm so mellow now.
Adulthood will do that.
Yeah, right. So I don't really do that anymore on stream because I'm just like, I don't really feel like being like this hyperactive like person on stream because it's like making me feel exhausted. Yeah. So I'm a little bit more of my true self. Obviously, I'm not fully my true self because, like, I normally wouldn't be talking that much. Definitely. I just don't know. I chill. And I also have a little avatar for me so I don't have to go on webcam.
That's actually really brilliant. And it, like, fits into your, like, you know, circles of interest, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because I, like, my Twitch, this is actually, like, my Twitch and kind of my TikTok all hold a little bit of everything I do. So, like, it has games, it has my art. I talk about creating in color and my Etsy shop. Like, oh, geez. I just can't. I stepped out of the situation. I looked at myself, like, out of my body, and I was like, what are you doing? but yeah, it's kind of like, it acts like a hub, I guess, in a weird way.
Yeah. I think that's cool. I mean, and that's something I've struggled with too. It's like, but these don't necessarily connect because I feel like the people who focus get to where they want to go faster. Yeah. However, I love what you were saying earlier about, you know, trying different things and then it becomes part of your art, you know, like you get influenced by those things and like they'll come together eventually is what I keep telling myself. But like, you know, there's some because they say like with YouTube channels or Twitch streams, like what's your focus? But like, why can't we just be ourselves and then you come for us and then you get to see everything we do? Like, why not?
yeah, exactly. Like I remember when I first started Twitch and I was like looking up like Twitch tips or whatever. And they're like, yeah, you need to play like these type of games and you need to do this and this and this. And I was just like, I ain't gonna do all that. No, I'm not interested. That's not me. I'm just gonna like
person.
Exactly. I'm not just like some like cartoony persona that's like just here for the sole purposes of like playing, I don't know, Dead by Daylight. I don't know. I just watch someone play that. It's a really interesting game, but I'm not going to play it. Sorry. Yeah. I do not do horror games, but they're like, do horror games. I'm like, no, I'm not. So I do mostly art streams and then I play like Stardew or Sims or something. Mm-hmm.
You should just do what you want to do.
Exactly. Just do what you want to do and don't let yourself hold you back. And obviously, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, do what you want to do.
Okay. Oh, well, yeah. Good asterisk to add.
Yeah. I got you.
What do you know now that you wish you knew when you were first starting out?
You're not under a time limit.
As long as you're good, we can go a little over. This is my last question, technically, but we can go however long.
Well, that was also my answer.
Oh.
But also, okay. That's good to know. But also, that's good to know.
So what did you say?
That you're not under a time limit.
Oh, I love that answer. It's yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, those are all the questions I have for you. Where can our listeners find you online? All the places, please.
all the places, really. Okay, so I am maybe it's KB on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok. My Etsy shop is called Star Rain Studio. And my podcast, again, is Creating in Color. And I also have a cat. He has his own Instagram.
Oh, my gosh. And what is that?
_period0thekitty. He's a very cute tuxedo cat.
That is awesome. I will follow immediately. Oh, and thank you. Just to clarify, the handle is maybe it's KB, like literally. Yes.
Yeah.
It's so casual when you say it. It's like, maybe it's KB. Like, but like, that's literally it. And it's so charming. I love it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a delight. And I look forward to catching up with you on the show in the future when you're a big storyboard artist. And obviously catching up with you along the way, personally, offline.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. And I honestly, it's an honor. Thank you so much.
It's an honor you said yes.
You're so sweet. I can't.
The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. Edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.